I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Andrew Sullivan, who is the councillor, or one of them, for the South Ward of the City of Fremantle. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Michael, and thanks for having me here today.
Well, we're still in this wonderfully socially, or I think we now call it physically distanced arrangement. 1.5 metres apart or
just.
Thereabouts. Just. Well, you're an architect by profession, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's about 1.4 actually.
But yeah.
We won't tell anyone, will we?
You've got one of those little laser things in your eye that you can tell a distance when you look at it, can you?
Reasonably so, yeah. I'm pretty good at knowing space. Yeah.
I apart from wanting to have been an anthropologist at some point in my life, I always thought perhaps I should have been an architect. I'm sure both disciplines are pleased I didn't come anywhere near them, but did you always want to be an architect?
I always had a keen interest in both architecture and landscapes. So as a kid, I had a huge vegetable garden. But then I was in an area where people were building houses around there. And, you know, after school, my idea of building a cubby house was to go and raid the 20 broken bricks from the house that was being built nearby and the leftover cement and bring them back and start building. So I always had an interest. I always loved old houses. You know, I was fascinated by them. I grew up in a architecturally 1950s modernist house, and so as a kid I was always kind of shocked by all the houses that everybody else lived in because it just was completely different to mine. So I think for all of those reasons I kind of had a keen interest in architecture, but I also loved geography at school. It was my best subject. I was keenly interested in you know, surfing and the beach and all of those sorts of things. We had a farm as well, so you know, I kind of was touched by the earth and liked forests and trees and buildings. It all just seemed to make perfect sense to me.
Well, here we are, and here you are representing the ward of South Fremantle, and there are very few houses built since the Second World War here. There are a good number of extensions and additions and remodelings, but how long have you been a resident of the ward?
Yep. So actually my house is a post-World War II house, so although it doesn't look like that, but I bought that in 1985 when I was still an architectural student, much to the horror of all of my friends at the time. But it's the best thing I ever did because it meant that even though I have never really earned very much money, I've always sort of had that sense of having a house, so it made me feel secure. So yeah, I moved here when all of my friends were wanting to live in Subiaco and North Perth and where all the party life was. But never looked back. I just loved Fremantle. I used to come down here as a kid, obviously, as a lot of people did. To go to Cicerello's and the Capri and the Roma and all of those sorts of things. But but my university days was when I really fell in love with Fremantle.
And even going back then, you can keep going back in sort of different generations and Fremantle's changed. But say, when did you first get onto council? Let's use that as a reference point.
Yeah. So even though I bought my house, I went overseas for 3 years soon afterwards, which was equally crazy, especially when interest rates were 40% and my parents were going, how are you going to pay your loans if you're going to go travelling? But eventually I came back in late 89, and I think it was about 92 that I actually got on council, but it was in the 2 years in the early 90s that I became very involved in the local community. And I kind of fell into council. I don't think it was intention.
Well, tell me about this. You come back, you're no longer living in a modernist 1950s house. You're living in Fremantle, which for some years at that point had been trying to conserve its historic parts, particularly the West End and that are all around central Frio. What did lead you into local government politics?
I've always been a person that's involved myself in the communities that I'm involved with. So, and that started even in primary school. I mean, I was the editor of the student rag, which was a pretty terrible document, but there was a small core of us that would sit in this basement beavering away with cartoons and publishing people's poems and things like that. So I was always involved in that sort of thing. So through my school days at university, I would head up the student group of architecture to try and squeeze as much money out of the guild as we could get for our parties. So they were just, it was just natural for me to be involved in community.
Was there a particular issue that caused you to become involved?
Before I moved to Fremantle, I actually ran the Australasian Architectural Student Conference, and we held that here in Fremantle, and we used a whole some of the old hotels in the West End for accommodation, and it was a fantastic event. But it also was raising a lot of issues about architecture and historic towns. And I wrote a piece in the Architect magazine, which was about facadism, and there was a fair bit of that going on at the time.
This is where you leave the facade but take everything else.
Yeah, where they basically gut the entire building and leave the outer shell as if that's somehow, you know, the heritage. And that happened at Number One High Street. It also happened with the big customs building as well. And it was sort
of... That's the customs on Fillmore.
Yeah, the Australian Customs building there. And also it was the time when, because it was 1985, it was just after the America's Cup had been won and the city was getting prepared for the challenge here.
For the loss.
Yeah, for the loss. And it just struck me that, you know, there was a lot going on. And I met a few locals, including June Hutchison, who was a councillor at the time. And Bryn Davis, who most people in South Fremantle would know as the Phantom Tree Planter, but was also incredibly active on the heritage front. And he became a bit of a mentor of mine. So I got involved in trying to stop the demolition of Number One High Street. And I distinctly remember standing there trying to convince June Hutchison, who, you know, everyone would know is a very strong advocate for heritage, to convince her that the building was more important than what the council had assessed and it should be kept. But of course, that was the day when everyone was saying, we need to make Fremantle ready for the America's Cup. And so we need to let a few things go to make it better. But of course, Bryn was staunch on that. And so I learned quite a lot and I got involved in that. And then I got involved in the Fremantle Society. I got involved in what was the South Fremantle Community Association. I got involved with running a fiesta at South Beach. So just things led towards getting on council. I started planting trees down in the, what is now Hollis Park, but for me was the South Fremantle tip site. So I got involved with locals down there. And eventually I realised that, you know, trying to lobby for change from the outside was probably harder than actually being on the council and just being one of the decision makers.
So this is the early 90s at this point.
So this was, the election would have been in May 92.
Yes.
And there was, because there were 18 councillors back then, it wasn't always easy to find people to run for wards. And some wards were more popular than others. And even though I lived in South Fremantle, I did work in the CBD of the city, the West End. And the president of the South Fremantle Community Association, Sue Bennett-Ung, was running for South Ward. And she said, why don't you run for city ward so that we'll have two South Fremantle councillors? No one's put their hand up yet. So I did. I went and nominated, and then a chap by the name of Phil Douglas, who has also been a councillor, used to run the Bannister Street Craftworks. He was thinking about putting his hand up, and I went and had a chat to him for about, you know, as long as it takes to drink a cup of coffee. And he said, "Oh, you seem like a decent sort. I'll just let you run." And so I got elected unopposed.
You didn't take a couple of heavies in with you to meet him?
No, no. I know that was a tactic back then, but it wasn't one of mine.
So I was trying to make light humour.
I can tell you a few stories. I don't know if I should.
Was local government sort of heavily politicised then, leave aside now? Was there sort of organisation in politics?
Not so much organisation. It was more, I guess there were factions. In the era before I got on council, I think they called them the Magnificent Seven. There was a group of councillors that got on at one time who were very heritage focused, but they were also quite strongly connected with the Labor Party as well. And so there was a real push at one stage to refresh the council. And that's what brought in the heritage bent, I guess, as well.
Yes.
So if you think about, you know, the union involvement in heritage, it was very important back then to be seen to be keeping the community's heritage.
Yeah, Jack Mundy. Yeah.
So,
just
and
passed
that was
away.
Strong here as well. And so, you know, and very thankfully so. So, but when I got on, it wasn't like that. There was no sense of factions other than were you a member of the Fremantle Society or not.
That was so about, was that a good thing?
Back then, yes, it was. Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, because it was a very, very focused and very held in very high esteem.
Yes.
I think Gough Whitlam was the patron back then.
Didn't
realise
that. Yeah. Mm. So you come on in 92. Was there a refreshing? Was there a bunch of new people at that point?
There were a few new people. It was in an era when I think there was starting to be that change where the strong ethnic community that had lived in Fremantle, South Fremantle, Beaconsfield, were starting to move their families out to greener pastures. And
to bigger homes.
To bigger homes. They, you know, the opportunity was there for them to do that. And there was new land being opened up south of the river. They weren't north of the river people, but there was opportunities south of the river in what's now Coburn. And so there was a sort of a changing of the guard slowly during the 90s, where I guess some of the newer people who'd moved in were starting to take over control of the council. But with 18 people on council, it was a really good mix. There were almost as many women as there were men. There was a great diversity in ethnicity, in age, and the like. So in that sense, it was a good council.
Well, you were at that point an architect with the sort of interests and growing up influences you've described. When you got onto council, did you have a particular platform? Was there something even secretly that you wanted to achieve? Can you remember? Can we remember back that far, Andrew?
Not really. Look, the heritage issues were really important to me. As an architect, I was also very strongly involved in urban design works. And so just physical improvements of streetscapes and urban environments were important. Because I was the city ward councillor, I was also very focused on what was happening to the city centre and what we needed to do for the future. And you know, I look back at those times and the sorts of things that I was talking about and getting very frustrated about, things like we need to do a retail study and we need to work out what retailing should look like into the future. And this is in the early 90s, and not getting anywhere with my colleagues who thought that it just should be left to chance. And I look at what we are doing now and what, you know, we do have a retail model for Fremantle. And it's exactly what I was talking about back in the 90s. So it was just interesting that I was very involved in things that have become quite obvious to do now. So
let's come back to retail. It's the sort of touch point that can get people quite animated around Fremantle. Many people think it's in the doldrums and keep saying so, and others predict that it's on the way out if it is in a doldrum. But you eventually cease being a city ward councillor and you become a south ward councillor. Yeah. When did that transition
occur? So I finished up in city ward in 98 and then was...
Councillor around that time, what became the 12 that it is
on? Yeah, it went from 18 councillors down to 12 councillors, and so there was simply no election to run. I voted myself off the council effectively by voting for that change. I did try and run again in 99, but I was also heavily involved in the Latent Action Coalition by that stage. And then coastal planning matters took over my life for probably the next 5 or 6 years. And then I didn't really...
So you were off council for about that period?
I was off council for everything up to 2009. I actually decided to do some work for once and, you know, be a responsible architectural employee and, you know, do that sort of thing. So
what was it, apart from a natural engagement in this sort of public life, that motivated you to stand again and in South Fremantle?
Yeah. Well, South Fremantle was always my natural home, in a sense, but I could have stood in North Ward, City Ward, South Ward, because I had strong connection with all three of those wards, at least.
Yes.
South Ward was was my passion at the time, and so that seemed to be the logical place to stand. And
in terms of issues, either in South Ward or anywhere else in the municipality, were there things that were calling out to you to deal with, or was it this desire to be part of the group that influenced the development of Fremantle?
Look, I think it was very much about there was a moment where it was clear there was going to be change for the better. The council before that, when Peter Tagliaferri was mayor, he had the misfortune of having a very divided council. It was split straight down the middle, and decisions were often made on who happened to be on leave of absence rather than anything else. And so it was a terrible time in Fremantle, and I could see that there was about to be a significant change. Brad was obviously likely to be elected as mayor, but it was more telling than that, because there seemed to be a bunch of people that were willing to put their hands up and get in there and sort out the mess.
And what was the mess at that point?
Well, it was just the indecisiveness of the council. I mean, it on one hand, it there was the, I guess what's called the heritage lobby. So you had Les Lauder, you had John Dowson and others in there who were very strident, and rightfully so. I mean, I'm an advocate of retaining heritage, and I think most people are. But on the other hand, you had people who were trying to get on with the development of the city as well. And they just couldn't agree. And it wasn't that they were poles apart. It's just that they couldn't agree. They couldn't work together to find the very easy middle ground or consensus to move forward. So it was a clash of personalities and approaches. And I found that, you know, even when I first got on, I very quickly learnt that, you know, it's not what you stand for, it's how you prosecute the things that you are trying to achieve that really makes the difference between a good councillor and someone that just means well.
So when you look back from now, going backwards, what have been some of the key steps, if you like, along the way to where the council has now got? You mentioned the retail focus. How did that come about, and how do you rate it as we sit here today with all of the terrible things that have befallen us?
I think the single most important thing that we did immediately after Brad was elected, and there were some excellent councillors, there was, you know, Josh Wilson and Dave Coggan, some great thinkers. The most important thing that we did was to say, what is the absolute critical strategic elements that we need to focus on above all else to get Fremantle reinvigorated. And it came down to doing the economic development strategy and the planning reforms for the CBD, because it basically, the motto became about people, people, and people. We needed more people living in the city centre, we needed more people working in the city centre, and we needed more people visiting the city centre. And that was as simple as that. If we were going to save retailing and if we were going to save the vitality of the city centre, the heart of Fremantle, those were the things that we had to do. And so that was the strategy. And for the next 2 years, we set about working on planning reforms that would achieve that, but also working on other strategies for the economic recovery.
So what, this is into the late noughties, is it? 2009,
yeah, so
10?
2010, 2011 was when those studies were done. They took about a year and a half to get to fruition, and then setting about the implementation of that. So,
so from your point of view, looking at where Fremantle's got to today, taking into account COVID and just the general state of markets, there are developments proposed, even approved for Fremantle, which no doubt will be affected. Well, one assumes they will be by some sort of slowdown, but my assumption might be wrong. Going forward, just a couple of years from where we are now, what will Fremantle look like, do you believe, in these sorts of economic, retail, etc. terms?
What I'm hoping, and certainly the council strategy, is that the what we call the east end of town will be hopefully a place that has its own special character in the same way that the west end does, but quite different, obviously.
Now, the east end that you're talking about, does that more or less start at the town hall, looking straight down what becomes Adelaide Street and then goes on to the bridges?
So, yeah, the east end is, the town hall and the town square are at the centre, and everything, I guess, west of Market Street, west of the High Street Mall is the west end, and everything east of the High Street Mall is the east end. And then beyond that, you have what I call the cantonment, which I think of as Queen Victoria Street and up to Cantonment Hill.
Yes. So the east end, and this seems to come through in a lot of discussions, is a subject of considerable focus at the moment. There's been some residential apartment development in that area. What else can or should happen in that area going down to the cantonment?
Residential should be a very big part of it. It would be hard to get a lot more residential into the West End. And so if we want a much larger residential population, the East End is where it should happen. I look at the streets like where Johnson Court are and where the old Spotlight or the original Coles was. And I see a street like that as being, it's a very wide street, has been a fantastic residential apartment street, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people living in that street and spilling out onto it and creating the street life. I see...
That fronts Adelaide Street, does it?
Yes. Yes. And then I see areas like Princess May Park, where Clancy's is, as the village green, and I suppose that's probably a hangover from me spending 3 years in London, but it really is an environment where high density living can exist in a way that has all of the benefits of high density living. So if you've got a village green at your doorstep and you've got a supermarket and a good pub like Clancy's, and you've got the cultural hub of Fremantle up at the Arts Centre, and they're all there.
The other side of Cantonment Street, going down to Beach Street, opposite Clancy's, really, there's a derelict big warehouse.
Yep.
What's the future of it?
I never liked talking about that site because every time the council over the last 30 years have talked about that site, it seems to set development back another 10 years. I've the owner of the site, Marilyn New, and her family, I mean, I've known Marilyn for a very long time. And I think we're getting to the stage now where I think development there is far more likely than it's not now. But I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to jinx it. So.
Well, it's currently the subject of some good graffiti and all sorts of posters, and it probably could be turned into a sort of to a gallery in its own right, in a way.
Yeah, look, and I hopefully it gets the right land use. If it had been developed, you know, 15 years ago, it would almost certainly have been carved up into small residential. I know that Marilyn had the idea of putting a hotel in the oldest bit, which is the bit that faces the car park of the shopping centre. But I'm not convinced that's the best use for the site. I would love to see it kept in its sort of open spatial quality, and that would suggest either public uses and or offices, or, you know, it'd be great to see government department or, you know, Mindaroo or someone like that come down and set up their offices there would be a great outcome.
Now, let's just turn our focus for a minute from the centre and historic parts of Fremantle and the new-to-be East End, and just come to the area of South Fremantle that we've touched on. Always fascinates me. South Terrace from South Street to Duro Road has become a popular cafe and restaurant area and seems still to thrive and will after COVID. But are there particular issues in the ward that you represent that you hold dear, or are there things people want to do that get you worried or thinking?
It's never easy. I mean, we've got both intensification and gentrification happening at the same time. Those two things often go at each other at great speed and have head-on crashes. And I think we certainly have that at the moment. Look, when I bought in 85, there was virtually, I don't remember a single tree in South Fremantle in 1985. I'm sure there were some, but they weren't very obvious to me. There was the biscuit factory was still running, and the gents and the ladies would come out in their white gear and have, you know, a continental roll at the local shop. And that was about it. There wasn't much else happening in South Terrace at the time. You know, there were service stations and those sort of things. There was a Greasy Spoon from memory, which I never went to. And I always had this image that, well, if George Street in East Fremantle is this incredibly vibrant place, as it was starting to be just then, why isn't South Fremantle like that? Why isn't South Terrace like that? And I imagined it would happen quite quickly, probably in the space of a few years. So much to my horror, it took a lot longer.
Well, they're a very gentrified group of people up in East Fremantle.
Well, I guess change happened much, much slower. So North Fremantle took off a bit more, and East Fremantle and Fremantle, and it took a while for South Fremantle to take off. But look, I think things like South Beach changed that. You only need to remember that just on our southern border, I mean, Bradkin Foundry was still operating and blowing black, probably lead-filled soot over us all. And the abattoir was still pumping effluent out into the ocean on a daily basis that when the sea breeze came in would mean South Beach had shank bones floating past you in the water, the milky water. And you wondered, if there's a shank bone in the water, where's the shark? You know, so South Fremantle was still had that industrial grunge about it. The biscuit factory, the tanneries were still open and the like. So it probably took to the end of the 90s before the real change happened and a lot of those things started to disappear.
There's no doubt that the southern development, which is probably officially, is it in Coburn, the North Coogee development area, has also helped change the general visibility of South Fremantle.
Yeah, well, that whole strip was an industrial strip. So you were on the edge of you know, the industry, as well as being on the edge of Fremantle. So it was very cheap to buy here, of course, but, you know, the sailing club went in 1985. So that started to change things. And,
yes.
And we completely rebuilt South Beach in, I think it was 96.
Yes.
And I think that made an unbelievable difference. I mean, I was just looking at some aerial photos the other day. And it reminded me that when I moved into Fremantle, if you went to the car park at South Beach on a Saturday afternoon, it was full of car enthusiasts doing burnouts like they did up in Scarborough car parks and the like. I mean, hardly anyone went to the beach back then. Wilson Park was completely barren and dry, and the fishermen would repair their nets there, so you weren't allowed to plant a single tree in the middle of the park anywhere, because it would get in the way of the annual net fixing operations that would occur. But rebuilding South Beach and making it what it is today, I think really changed the way South Fremantle was viewed by people from outside of the area. And ever since then, South Terrace has just got better and better and better. So we're not seeing more people living in South Fremantle. I suspect there's probably less than there were in the 70s, because there are less people per household. But the number of people that now come to South Fremantle for all of its benefits is just massive. You know, it really has, it's done what George Street did and far more. So.
And you've got the cat bus going around, you've got the younger visitors who are so often on the bus, as well as the older, obviously, who get around on the bus. When you look at the municipality as a whole, are there particular projects or things, whether it be in relation to beach beautification or whatever, that you'd like to see happen and see in place if we were having this discussion in 5 or 10 years' time?
Look, there are what we call the strategic imperatives at council. There are a number of projects which would really transform the way the city functions. So projects like opening up towards Victoria Quay and what happens around the railway station. You know, the railway station is our gateway. And if you want to impress people coming to your place, your gateway and your front entrance ought to be a bit of a showcase. And of course, it's the opposite.
It's a bit of a side entrance out of the railway station.
That's very sad. And the opportunity that knuckle between the city centre and the waterfront is so important. We've managed to fix some of the areas of the city. If you think about the Esplanade and Bathers Beach and the connections to the fishing boat harbour, they're much better than they ever were before.
Yes.
But the one area that is letting us down is that railway station and entrance into Victoria Quay. And we need to work with the state government to make that area what I call development ready. You know, you don't wait for developers to come in and do development and then try and fix up the urban environment. Good development happens when governments make areas development ready. So you have to do the planning and you have to start the activation before the developers come along. They learnt that at Elizabeth Quay. You know, they thought, oh, if we just dig a hole and create some land, people will come and build buildings there. But it didn't happen. It wasn't until they actually started purposing the area with activities that developers could see that it was actually going to be a vibrant place. There seems to be a lack of imagination, I guess, in the development industry. You have to actually show them what the place is going to be like. And I look at things like the skate park that we built in the Esplanade and the way in which the Esplanade is functioning now as opposed to what it was before. And it doesn't surprise me at all that we now have a developer wanting to build a significant new development where the Italian Club is and incorporate the Italian Club. And then directly over in the Fishing Boat Harbour, another developer wanting to develop that, so that we will have these two significant bookends at one end of the Esplanade Park. And I think that's happened because we've fixed the bottom end of the Esplanade, and suddenly people can see what an amazing place it is, and why wouldn't you want to build a building right next to it? So,
Andrew, we're getting towards the end of our time. It's been very interesting talking to you, particularly as you're able to go back as far as you do with the council. Are you the longest going back serving member, or was there someone who's been there longer than you now?
Well, there is Doug Thompson, who has been there continuously. He was there when I started, and he's still there now.
So. Apologies, Doug.
Yes.
All that time.
But he's off on that, you know, other side of the river, North Fremantle bent, so, yeah.
Well, I've never quite got to the bottom of how North Fremantle came to be in and how East Fremantle came to be out and why Hamilton Hill and places aren't part of the municipality. But that's a topic for another day, I suspect. Yeah. You're currently the deputy mayor.
That's right.
I spoke to the mayor recently, and by the end of the year, he'll effectively be in campaign mode, trying to get elected for the Greens to the upper house of the state parliament. So you'll become a busy person for a while, I assume.
Possibly. I've given my colleagues on council the commitment that when the time comes and the mayor has to resign, assuming that that's what will happen, that I will throw open and have contested the seat of deputy mayor. It's voted on by the councillors, obviously. I just think that, you know, I was voted in as deputy mayor, which is a role in itself, but the deputy mayor will effectively become the mayor for 6 months, and I think it would be appropriate for the council to be able to make that decision based on what the new job effectively is going to be.
Oh, sounds very sensible and democratic and very Fremantle.
Yeah, well, I like working with a group of people that are very collegiate, and, you know, people often point to the council as being puppets of Brad, and that's, you know, probably the most offensive thing you could say to 12 people who are all incredibly individual thinkers and very capable people, all making their own mind up every time. And I love working with that diverse mob. I couldn't think of anything worse than being in that role of acting mayor if you had any doubt as to whether that's what the mob wanted.
Well, Andrew, it's been lovely talking with you. Thank you for coming along, and good luck. We didn't even get on to COVID, which is probably as well. There's far too much talk about it.
By the time this goes to air, COVID will be over, Michael. Hopefully.
Well, it's happening very quickly, I sense.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Michael.